Welcome to the ADHD Mums Podcast, a safe place for everyday Australian mums to discuss their struggles with ADHD, motherhood and life.
Today we have by far the most anticipated guest I've ever had, which is Rodney White. How are you, Rodney?
I'm very well, thanks, Joan.
I have never had a guest that I've announced in the group, and I've never had so many questions and so many comments and so much excitement.
I hope I can live up to my reputation then.
I know. And look, a few of the people that are a bit efficient were like, that will save us all ringing Rodney individually because obviously not because it's all individualized, which we'll get to. But I'm just going to do a quick overview of Rodney just in case you don't know who he is. So Rodney White has been a pharmacist at Monash Health for over 30 years. For the last 20 years, he has worked as a senior pharmacist in the Monash Medicines Information. And he's worked in various teams and departments that we won't go through, but he's got extensive expertise in medicine, particularly in pregnancy, breastfeeding, pediatrics, and women's health. Rodney was recently awarded the 2017 Victorian Pharmacist Medal for his work. Aside from that, he would be one of the most named names in any ADHD group I've ever been in, which is hilarious because he doesn't have social media. And you're not actually predominantly out in the community. So that must be a testament to the hard work that you do on the phone behind the scenes. So welcome to you, Rodney.
Thank you very much, Jane. And while I am in a hospital setting, much of my work is within the community. In fact, I'd say it's a broad mix of people that I get to speak to in the community. So I enjoy that aspect. It ranges from the super experts right through to poor mums who are struggling with their breastfeeding issues and particularly involving medicines. But we cover a very broad range of topics in here. But it's nice to have a chat to you this evening.
Oh, absolutely. We are hoping that perhaps we can cut some of the phone calls that are coming into you, Rodney. I did a Google search for your bio earlier and the most number one search was Rodney White phone number. And I was like, oh my God, poor Rodney.
I never look at Google searches. I don't trust it at a whole variety of levels.
Quickly before we start, we just need to be really clear that Rodney is talking really generally. This is a podcast episode for information, general information only. This is not individual advice. This is not medical advice. This does not mean that you should go out and get a script for anything or start doing anything different or not go see a medical practitioner. That needs to be really clear going forward. Is there anything you'd like to add to that, Rodney?
I'm happy with that, Jan. Thanks. We'll see how we go as we move through.
Okay. Firstly, how did you get into this area?
Well, the demand, it's exploded. I'm speaking to you more than anyone. The demand for particularly medicines information in an ADHD setting has just exploded. Many topics in medicine have exploded over recent years because there have been so many advancements in this space and many directly affect breastfeeding women, pregnant women, because they are often ones that where the problems have been exacerbated by the pregnancy or the giving birth. That creates its own set of mental health challenges at a whole range of levels, of course. And I've always been working in through those aspects, but it's the very recent implementation of ADHD medicines for adult populations. And that's really only been the last 5 to 10 years. Before that, I would have had no questions at all. And I must admit, I've been here for 30 years now in this role, and the first 20 would have had none. It was all about kids, children with ADHD getting medicines. Now it's moved into incredibly huge, and we find this a lot. Things move very quickly in today's world. Mm. If there's a new medicine or there's a new breakthrough, it's incredibly quickly taken up, and there's the power of social media and the media in general. It's taken up very, very rapidly before we necessarily might have a really good handle on what are the implications.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think even in the last 5 years, my youngest child is just turned 5. And I feel like now things have changed again, where the belief around the mum gets diagnosed with ADHD when a child does has almost changed already. Because it feels like there's more women, even in the last 6 months, 12 months, talking about breastfeeding, pregnancy, IVF and ADHD medication. Whereas before, there wasn't even anyone talking about that because your child was at school and the teachers rung you for a problem. Now it's happening earlier again, which I think is great, but we haven't really necessarily caught up on the information known around meds and all of these issues.
And we don't necessarily have the expertise in prescribers out there because they were predominantly pediatricians. Now it's moved into an adult field. Psychiatry hasn't really necessarily caught up with that incredible demand, like a lot of other areas, again, where the demand exceeds the supply. And I know a lot of mums are really frustrated by the fact that they've been trying to get some help. They're desperate to get a little bit of relief, and it's very challenging.
Oh, yeah. And plus, from the psychiatrist's point of view, I would imagine with that many people on your wait list, when do you do professional development? That wouldn't be something that I would be doing a lot.
And it's cutting edge stuff. It's not something you can necessarily be taught. A lot of it is experience and just general principles, working with people and seeing what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's dive right in. I've got a number of questions that the women have written in, which I love. First, there's just so many. Are women able to take or continue taking ADHD medication whilst pregnant?
That's possibly one of the really tough ones. And I've had a number of discussions with a variety of people. This question hasn't been fully answered. And pregnancy is always a challenge because we just don't do the studies in pregnancy. The studies are almost impossible to get through. And nobody's interested in those studies because manufacturers of all descriptions want to steer away from medicine used in pregnancy. They're not interested in advocating that. And so there's kickback from manufacturers about doing any studies in pregnancy in the first place. And secondly, it's just not various people I speak to are involved with the Therapeutic Goods Administration and categorization of medicines in pregnancy. And these things are extremely difficult. These are usually very old medicines, and yet we still don't have a handle on exactly how they fit into a pregnancy environment. But having said all of that, let's go through a few basics. They don't tend to cause malformations. So your risk, if you're on something, and I talk about traditional agents rather than newer things at this point, so your traditional stimulants aren't associated with an increased risk of malformation. So it makes little difference if you're on them when you get pregnant. They don't tend to increase risk of miscarriage. Although, again, you have to remember that the condition itself has an incidence of problems associated with pregnancy. Let's just leave it at that for now. The concerns with ADHD medicine stimulants, particularly in pregnancy, is that it seems that they can reduce what we call intrauterine growth, so a little bit of what we call IUGR, intrauterine growth retardation, and a little bit of increased risk of prematurity. Now, for some people, that won't be relevant. For example, you go in with a lot more confidence. For example, if you had a term baby already and they were well and otherwise healthy, you're more comfortable in that environment. Whereas if you're perhaps a diabetic or you had other medical conditions associated with your pregnancy, gestational diabetes, as I said, or hypercholesterolemia, or all sorts of unusual, or usual, but associated medical conditions, that might be more problematic. So prematurity and small birth weights may be more challenging in an environment where a woman had a less robust state of health going into the pregnancy. So that's always important in pregnancy. Being well and having a great mental health wellness in going into pregnancy is critical under any circumstance. It's really helpful. It's more challenging if you've got poorly controlled ADHD or you've got a medical condition which might in some way interfere with those increased parameter risks. Does that make sense? I'm sorry, it's hard to put it in simple terms.
No, it does. I actually think that does make sense. It does lead into one other question that I had at the end, which was, is it okay to take, and I know you're talking about traditional stimulants during like IVF, and because you said in the beginning, it didn't impact when you get pregnant. Is IVF in the same bucket as that?
Pretty much. So for most IVF, it depends what sort of IVF. And we get a lot of people asking me about egg collection, for example, and it's irrelevant when you have those eggs collected. If you are going to have eggs collected at any time in your life, those eggs are right there pretty much from birth. And so if you're exposed to ADHD medicine, stimulants particularly, it doesn't matter whether that's during the process of collection or beforehand or at any point in your life, it's always that exposure. But because it doesn't cause birth defects, it's not what we call teratogenic. That's the key word here, meaning that it can cause birth defects. They've never been known to do that. For, let's say, Len, be more specific, methylphenidate, dexamphetamine, and listexamphetamine, which is Vyvanse, as you know, they have not been associated with increased risk of malformations. So if you go into pregnancy on those, your risk is what we call standard population risk, which means the same as pretty much everybody else who's doesn't have a predisposing condition to problem, shall we say.
Okay, okay. And then would that same stance extend out onto breastfeeding?
Please, please, your viewers need to understand that breastfeeding is a completely different topic from pregnancy.
Okay.
Completely different setting. And they're always interchanged, but they're extremely different. Like many medicines are very safe in pregnancy that are problematic in breastfeeding. For example, Stimitol, prochlorperazine, widely used for first trimester hyperemesis, but problematic in breastfeeding because exposure to babies via breast milk is not good. And conversely, many things may be safe in breastfeeding that aren't safe in pregnancy. So you can't cross them over. Now, in this particular case, when we talk about breastfeeding, the gold standard reference, and I probably sent to you and many other mums, thousands of mums, I'm sure I've sent out to, is the Professor Thomas Hale Infant Risk website. That group, Infant Risk in the US, renowned as one of the very few groups with expertise and doing studies and doing follow-up in purely breastfeeding, no pregnancy, information and development. And their group has written a very good profile on ADHD medicines in breastfeeding, which I strongly encourage you to have a look at if you haven't already seen that and you're thinking along these lines. And I strongly encourage you to take it to your prescriber, many of whom will feel very uncomfortable about prescribing these agents in a breastfeeding setting. It's terrific from both a patient perspective and from a prescriber perspective to have that. They're, as I say, they're bona fides, they're authoritative, University of Texas, and they're a big, highly established group that provide really valuable advice to breastfeeding mums on a whole range of topics, including things like Botox and other sort of things that mums might want to know. So infantrisk.com, it is a .com site, but that's because they publish big textbooks that I have sitting next to me most of my time. And that's well covered. And even with the very young babies, and again, the differential is a bit like pregnancy. There's very early pregnancy and then very late pregnancy. They're very different focuses. And the same with breastfeeding. There's very early breastfeeders, preemie babies or newborns versus 6, 12, 18-month-old babies who are breastfeeding. And they're an extremely polar ends of the scale of risk, if that makes sense. So there's a big consideration across the whole spectrum, both for pregnancy and breastfeeding, changes as you move through the time scales.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense. Actually, if anyone missed the website, I can put it in episode notes. That's actually really helpful.
But it is important whenever you're asking those questions, and I really appreciate mums letting me know how old their baby is, because you feel an enormous comfort zone in dealing with babies, let's say 6 to 12 months plus, whereas younger babies may have undisclosed problems or unpresented concerns that they may be more vulnerable, and they certainly may be for things like arrhythmias, which may not have been disclosed yet. So please, whenever you're asking questions about breastfeeding or pregnancy for that matter, the time scale of your pregnancy or the time scale of where you're at with your breastfeeding journey.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying, because you wouldn't want to come out of hospital with a week old baby and go Google, can I take ADHD meds whilst breastfeeding? Find an answer that's not relevant to you with the how old your baby is and just go with it blindly. I hear what you're saying. That's a great point.
And the other thing too with that is it's a bit different if you've already had the medicine and you know what it does for you and you know what adverse effects it might have for you versus someone who's never had it before going into a breastfeeding journey, that been waiting to get pregnant. Now they're through that and they really want to get started. Yeah. If you don't know its impact on you, then it's hard to estimate what might be the impact on baby as well. And these have pros and cons. Some things work really well. Some things don't work well for any individual. And it's really helpful if you've had prior experience And that applies across the medicines board. If you've used it before with good effect and you know what to expect, you can anticipate this and this, it makes a big difference compared to someone who's never had it before. And that poses a different set of challenges again, not just for baby, but for mum as well, of course.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's funny because I was diagnosed when I was 36. And so I was like in a massive rush to get the meds right. Even though I'd been so many years without it, it was like hope that everything could be better, right? But I would be trying to imagine if I had that feeling, because I had a psychologist diagnose me and then he's maybe you should go try meds. So I was like in a hurry, as only ADHDers are, because you've just found the answer that you need to access.
Oh, not only ADHD, weight loss and a whole range of topics, you're in a hurry.
But then if I was breastfeeding a baby, I'd be so tempted to try and want to start the medication journey. But from a non-emotional place, it's probably not the right time.
But it's the sleep deprivation and other things that can cause. You see, that's huge in breastfeeding. If you're not sleeping, and that's usually the case, and particularly if you've got a fractious baby who's not sleeping either, oh boy, you're in a world of pain on top of your ADHD.
Yeah, and then you don't even know, because sometimes you have dairy and then you think, is the baby lactose intolerant? It's the whole thing goes around, around, around. I can imagine if you tried a new med in the midst of that, it'd be like, was it the med? Was it me? Was it the air conditioning? Who knows? The baby's not sleeping. Like, how would you know?
I like to blame air conditioning.
Me too. It's never the mum, that's for sure.
Interestingly, that point, partners are a very important part of that journey too, of course. Support at that level makes a massive difference, and people discount that sometimes.
Yeah, that's a great point, actually. A few people have written in and said, is there a more friendly pregnancy or breastfeeding ADHD med than others? Is a non-stimulant, like, how does that work?
The older established agents are clearly preferred options. As I said, dexamphetamine, lisdexamfetamine, and methylphenidate Ritalin are the three that I would almost universally stick to, and then you can tweak it with other little bits and pieces. Like sometimes, again, as you know, ADHD often needs more than just ADHD medicines too. It sometimes pulls in a variety of other antidepressant options or mood stabilizing options or other things that get thrown into that mix. I rarely see people on just one treatment option. It's usually a few things that, as the journey evolves, they tend to find that adding a little bit of a touch of this or a, it's a bit like being a master chef, isn't it? You tweak the recipe a little bit.
You do. Okay, so you said more traditional ones. What about trying to conceive? Is there any differences there?
Generally speaking, no. And here's another great challenge for women getting advice in this regard. Often, prescribers will be very reluctant to validate that it's safe to stay on your ADHD medicine, and you need to reinforce to them the massive difference that it's made. If it has made a massive difference, if you feel uncomfortable with it or you don't feel it's made a huge benefit to your life, then by all means, it's probably wise to really wind it back or even stop it. But if you know it's made a huge difference, people tend to focus only on the medicine rather than on the huge improvement in your mental health state and your ability to function. And that's so important in pregnancy. I think we might have said before, there's nothing worse than becoming pregnant and then stopping everything and then being in a very dark and horrible place, sitting around thinking about things because you can't work and you can't study and you can't focus and you can't look after the other kids. It's that wellness is very important. It's always that balance, and they always say benefits versus risk, but it's not easy to establish the risks, and the benefits are often pushed aside. So it's hard to be objective in this space. It's such an emotional conundrum, pregnancy, breastfeeding.
Oh, yeah. And I think there's always an element of self-sacrifice too. Like, I think mothers, probably the ones that are worrying enough to ring you, are probably the ones that are like, if it's going to make my life harder, I can cope with it if it's the right thing for my baby. But then they're not fully appreciating that happy mother, happy baby kind of whole vibe.
Great point, because you are your baby's wellness. If you are unwell, then your baby is going to struggle. If you are well and able to do all of the things you know you have to do, that makes baby's journey a lot more secure and a lot more environmentally learning capacity and a whole range of other things. So great point. Your wellness is paramount to baby's wellness.
I did have a mum once, and she said to me that she didn't take ADHD meds because she didn't think she should breastfeeding wise, didn't check with anybody, just decided that was the right thing for her to do.
Oh, lots of mums do that.
Yeah. And she actually was at a mother's group and she didn't put the brake on the pram. And the pram went right across this car park. The baby was fine, but she was like, I'm actually not okay because it's the little things and the attention that I'm not paying that my baby could have been cleaned up by a car. And then that little bit of going through the breast milk, she ended up just going back on meds because she's like, that's not worth it.
I hear those stories regularly, of course.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'm not here to advocate either way. It's very much a personal decision here. And all I say to you is when you approach it with your prescriber, and they're the key person within your dynamic here, you've got to be factual, but you've got to give them your perspective quite clearly. If it's made a huge difference to your life, you've got to be upfront about that. If you in any way indicate, I'm not sure whether I should continue on or not, they're going to want to say, no, don't continue, stop it. So if you need it and it's made a big difference and you feel you're good, or even if you find you really struggle without it, you've got to get back to them and reiterate that, so that it's one of those very subjective topics, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. Okay, so I was going to take a little bit of a diversion, Rodney. Okay, if you can't answer any of these, just checking in. Diversion, you talk to ADHD mums all the time. A couple of people have written in and said that a lot of people are talking about PMS and ADHD meds. And there's a few people that said, can you take something else along with the medication during this, or should you up your ADHD meds, or is there anything we can do to offset that feeling of insanity when you think nothing's working, my ADHD meds aren't working? I always have the feeling that I need to get a passport, drive to the nearest airport, leave the country, that kind of vibe. Is there anything we can do around that period?
Yeah, look, and it's not just PMS. It's a whole range of other topics that impact on ADHD and vice versa. So it can be even perimenopausal symptoms. It can be a whole range of women's health things, particularly if you're having heavy periods where you're losing a lot of blood and you can be very exhausted. Yes, they usually are fairly independent of each other. Again, PMS, there's a lot of discussion on it at the moment. How do we approach this? There's no clear pathway, although I like the sort of Jean Hales. I'm a big believer in the Jean Hales group. They have a very good website, JeanHales.org. They have a lot of information on their website, but the two are quite independent in even though they're often interlinked or often associated, they are quite independent in their treatment options. Again, it may often be a bit of an antidepressant in the mix. It could be a mood stabilizer in the mix. It could be so many different things. And it's hard to speculate on how any individual is going to go with the combination. But normally, as I say, ADHD is a condition where a lot of medicines may become involved for various reasons.
Okay. Here's one that you've touched on earlier. A few people have written in around, if you think you just have ADHD, should ADHD meds be enough? And they said, obviously following pharmacist, doctor, prescriber instructions, but do I need to take antidepressants? I think what they're saying here is if someone's been misdiagnosed, or maybe they do actually have like depression, anxiety, and then find out they have ADHD, should they try and go off their antidepressants to then start the stimulant? Is it the wrong med for ADHD?
Definitely not. I say that all the time, but then there's often an element of even a little bit of psychosis or schizophrenia or even bipolar. So there's often an antipsychotic in the mix as well. And some of those agents, for example, might cover all three. There's something like quetiapine, great for sleep, bit of an antidepressant, bit of a mood stabilizer, bit of an antipsychotic. Labels don't necessarily mean very much. It's more about how they impact on you, the pros, the cons, and looking for then adding things. If, for example, an ADHD med mightn't address, you might find you've got a more underlying anxiety under the circumstance where you've gone onto your ADHD stuff and it's really giving you focus and it's really giving you purpose and you're really able to function, but you still got that underlying element of, for example, anxiety. Anxiety is very prevalent in society, particularly amongst women of childbearing age. It's a big driver, and I could blame you for that, Jane, and social media, but I'm sure it's multifactorial.
Probably.
And there's a lot going on, isn't there? That is, again, you can certainly, I'm all for you trying to wean an antidepressant. But then people will come back to me and say, I was fine when I came off it, but now I'm deteriorating again. And you're never quite sure if that's the re-emergence of the condition, particularly if there's family history. I always find it's really interesting to get a fairly comprehensive family history, which my job doesn't allow me, but your prescriber has that opportunity. And I think it's very important to look at mum, dad, siblings, and others to see how their lives have evolved and what's worked for them and what hasn't worked for them. And I think that's an extra bonus you can undertake if you have that opportunity to ask those questions of family members.
I see what you're saying. So if, I don't know, we're talking generically, but if you had a really strong family history and pretty much everyone has been on antidepressants for a long period and they don't go well off it, would you then be someone that should try and go off it? I get what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, and only you can answer these sort of things. Mind you can come off it and go back on again, but I do find with some things like ADHD meds, you can do that. You can come off and go on again pretty easily. Antidepressants, it's more challenging because there's always this big startup period where it's really problematic and then it settles down and then you function really well. But when you try and come off them again, and particularly some specific agents, I won't go through names, but are really problematic to come on and go off. And so it's a bit harder with antidepressants compared to, say, ADHD meds, where you can stop them and start them with some sort of regular pattern, if you will.
Yeah, okay. Okay, that makes sense. And one final question is, a lot of people debate about medication breaks online. There's a lot of mixed opinions on it. I was wondering if there are any benefits from your point of view on medication breaks.
Again, it's such an individual thing. Some people seem to need it on an ongoing basis. Some people find that they do. And I think you ask yourself, how have I gone when I've had a break? It depends on the pressures and stresses in your life too, a lot of the time. I find particularly with a lot of young women, the family years, the young kids' years are really challenging. You've got a lot of confrontation. You've got a lot of barriers to overcome. And you've got a lot of, generally, as is at the moment, a lot of illness within the family because they're bringing things home from daycare or they're bringing home from school. And you suffer more than they do necessarily. They recover quickly and you don't. Mm. So they are very challenging years. Then you often go through, hopefully, you go through a period of more stability and where things achieve a more natural rhythm. And I think you've got more opportunity to come off a number of different types of medicines under that circumstance. But then you might get pregnant again and all of a sudden it winds up incredibly quickly. I'm a great believer in adjusting to the life stage you're in. It's all about stress to a very large extent, but that manifests in a whole different set of ways. It might be sleep, it might be mood, it might be your job, your work, your shifting house. All of these stresses go into the mix. And so you can never say it's a good time or a bad time because you never know what's coming along in a short space of time. For example, finances are a big topic of conversation. I mean, that's a huge stressor for a lot of young families. It depends on the time of your life and how settled and adapted you are to where you're at in your life cycle.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, because if you were going through the last year, I've had 3 kids diagnosed. We've been at pediatricians all over the place, setting up therapies, homeschooling, starting school, repeating kindy all over the place. Would that be a year that I would take medication breaks? No, that would not be the year.
And COVID is massively disruptive too for so many people.
Absolutely. So I get what you're saying, but if you were really at a period of that things were going well, then maybe that would be something that you could consider. Need to be in the right place at the right time kind of thing. Is that what you're saying?
And even the seasons make a difference.
Yeah, true.
I find a lot of women really struggle coming into winter because everybody's in the house and everybody's getting on everybody else's nerves, whereas they're all out running around in summer free and you're a lot more relaxed in your approach. There's so many things that come into it. I'm just a medicines guy. You know, I can't work this stuff out.
But maybe then women are looking for permission. Maybe they want permission to stay on the med. Because I saw once someone wrote in the group and said, my psychiatrist recommended that I take weekends off medication. And then she said back to him, weekends are actually the most busy for me because I've got multiple kids' sports. And actually, that's worse than a work day. And there's no periods that I am actually off. So I don't know when I'm going to have this medication break. And the amount of women that wrote and said, thank God, because I've been told to do that too. And that makes me feel better because I haven't been able to have a medication break on the weekends like they've been advised. Maybe in a generic way, it's good to have a medication break without looking at the whole person and the whole family, which is what you're talking about. That may not be the right time.
Yeah. And again, some medicines are vulnerable to what we call developing tolerance. You need more and more, like benzodiazepines are horrible, horrible medicines because you start off low and then you need a bit more, a bit more, and a bit more. And in the end, you're in a very bad place with them. Less so with stimulants, although they are prone to a little bit of addiction underneath that, or a bit of habituation. But having said that, if your dose is very stable and you're very well, then there's nothing to suggest the need for a medication break just for the sake of a medication break.
Okay.
It's not the purpose of what we're doing. It's all about that wellness that you generate. And what I often find is too, mums and other young women can generate strategies when they're well and focused and able to function. They can generate their own inner strategies to cope with the stresses that life brings along. And it might be simple things like meditation or cognitive therapy, or it might be just relaxation therapy, or it might be even physical exercise. It could be a whole range of things that are very important in their wellness, but they can't achieve that without the medicine. So you add a little bit of medicine, they get that capacity to think things through a little more clearly, and they realize that their wellness is hinged on the things that they're doing in their life that are not the demands of motherhood. It might be they say, all right, I've got to go. It'd be as simple as going for a coffee three times a week with a cohort of friends. It doesn't take much sometimes, but those things are really important in your wellness journey, of course.
Yeah, it's so funny. We had someone on the podcast recently and she said that she had this dog and she reckoned the dog had ADHD and the dog was doing all these crazy things and it was hilarious, right? But then she said that when she took her ADHD meds and she got diagnosed and medicated, suddenly her dog was instantly heaps better. And she didn't realize that herself was rubbing off on her dog. She was blaming the dog and it was actually her. And I was actually thinking to myself, oh my God, that's like my children when I don't take meds.
I love that story.
And then they're like crazy. And I'm like, it's all their fault. Look what they're doing to me. And it's like, no, actually, I started that. And they're just reacting to me.
Yeah. People say to me all the time, is this medicine going to affect my baby? I say, sometimes in a positive way, even really young babies feel that tension, feel that anger, feel that frustration. And it is often at those levels, really coming out. And people say postnatal depression, but it's very rarely just depression. It's usually other things. As I say, anxiety is big, or it could be anger. It could be frustration. It could be just really wanting to get escape, as you said before, with get out of the country for PMS. It manifests in different ways for different people. And how you cope with that is a big part of whether you need to continue with your med or you can do without it when you learn the strategies that cope with that.
Oh, absolutely. Look, those are all of my questions that I had for you, Rodney. Is there anything you want to say before we finish up?
I think it's important too. A lot of young women neglect their own health and wellness because of the demands of their life. And sometimes really simple things can make a big difference. Like iron deficiency is big. Things like just checking your glucose every now and then to see whether you're pre-diabetic even, because a lot of women have gestational diabetes and that impacts on their kidney function and all sorts of other things. There's simple interventions can often make a big difference. So if you're in any doubt, usually having a good GP makes a big, massive difference. So you can have a talk to them, but don't just push it aside. It's really important that you at least to educate, even if you can't get to the doctor, have a bit of a look. There's some great websites like the Better Health Channel, betterhealth.vic.gov.au in Victoria, but there are others across the country that are great for fact sheets on basic things. As I said, iron deficiency, iodine deficiency, often thyrohypo and hyperthyroidism comes into play after pregnancies and around that time. And that's up and down all over the place. And that can make a big difference. Simple little things can sometimes make a big difference to your wellness and easily correct it. Even stupid things like constipation, and it can be really frustrating, constipation and irritable bowel disease. Sometimes they're very quickly sorted once we get to the root of the problem.
Absolutely. Look, thank you so much for your time. There's so many women that commented and said, I've rung Rodney so many times. Please thank him for his service to the community. So thank you so much, Rodney. I am just so grateful.
They just didn't realise how unpleasant my visage is because they're talking to me on the phone.
No. You say that, but you know, everyone that I've spoken to said no one's been willing to speak to them on the phone. Their own treating professional doesn't want to flesh it out, and someone listens, hears the whole story, and then can make even a suggestion. So I really appreciate what you're doing.
Well, I apologize back to them because they very rarely get the opportunity to give me their whole story. My days are so busy that I often will interrupt them and say, can you please hold? And I really hate doing that.
Oh, well, yeah, but you know what though, Rodney, the amount of people that have said that you have given them more time than their treating professional that shut them down immediately and don't even listen to the fact that they really want to keep taking the med.
It's hard as a GP. I speak to a lot of GPs during the course of my day because they have troubles too. And you'd be surprised. Some of their dramas are more than in the general population. What could I say? It's a hard gig, particularly from this aspect. And they don't have, again, a lot of the time, they don't have the depth of comfort because I've worked in the field for so long and spoken to tens of thousands of women over the years. It gives you a great sense of understanding and empathy in that group. And I know how tough a battle it is sometimes to get through, but sometimes a quick or a quiet word can make a big difference or at least set you down the path. So I bless each and every one of you and thank you for trusting me over a telephone, especially with artificial intelligence on the horizon. I think I'd be very careful who I did trust, but thanks for your trust.
Oh, no worries. Thank you for your time, Rodney.
Thanks, Joan.
The key message here is you are not alone. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, follow us on Instagram or head over and join our amazing ADHD Mums podcast Facebook community. Everything you do matters and helps to spread the word about what neurodiversity in females looks like.